And welcome to minute 48 of season 8 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film, Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on Hump Day, which is also Christmas, so I will wish you a Merry Christmas, is my guest, Nick Rehack. Of the Rabbit Hole Podcasting Network. So welcome back to the show, Nick, and Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you very much, Rob, and Merry Christmas to you as well, man.
I don't celebrate it. So.
That's right. How embarrassing. It's that thing where you just like default and then send it back. So I guess instead, don't have a Merry Christmas. How about that?
I will have a happy Hanukkah. How's that one?
There you go.
I will have a happy Hanukkah because this year they do coincide. So
I was just about to ask. Sometimes you kind of can or can't say that depending on when, but it does fall in line this year?
Yes, this year. Well, I define falling in line. I mean, Hanukkah is 8 days and Christmas is 1 day. So there's more of a chance that it will somehow they will cross paths.
There we go. But, do they cross paths this year?
This year they actually will start on the same day. So
hey, there you go. All right. Look at us. Huh?
That's right.
Making it work.
Isn't that what we're trying to do here?
I mean, we're trying. You're succeeding. I'm struggling right now.
No, never, never. You never struggle. You're a great guest. I always love having you here. So don't think that for a second. All right. So minute 48 begins with Miller asking a question and ends with the men watching as the bullets begin to fly. So yesterday, we ended things with Paul Giamatti giving a little bit of exposition as to what's really going on here. And the whole time we constantly are hearing in the background, we heard this also on Monday, we hear like sounds in the background, from a loudspeaker, but we're not really sure who it is or what it is or anything like that. And at this point, Miller turns to Hill and says, "Who's that on the loudspeaker?" And he goes, That's Dagwood Dusseldorf, our friendly neighborhood morale officer." So do you know who Dagwood Dusseldorf is?
No. And actually, I'm glad you said something, too, because I only heard Dusseldorf. I didn't even hear the Dagwood part. So hearing that, it should jostle my memory, make me think of somebody offhand. But no, I got nothing.
Okay, so you see, I always believed that the name Dagwood Dusseldorf is similar to Tokyo Rose or something like that, right? You know, that it's something that you know, someone trying to, convince soldiers to abandon their posts, you know, their enemy posts and stuff like that, you know, doing radio propaganda and things like that.
Oh, okay.
So I always took this to be a very serious thing. It turns out that basically Hill is making a joke. You know, they're really, it's not, that's just how they're referring to this guy. It wasn't like a specific name of somebody who would who would constantly be giving information, trying to convince the Allied soldiers to abandon their posts and things like that. You know, we'll get a little bit more into that later on, but basically, in the credits of this movie, so there is an actor who is credited as both German number 3, and he's also known as the loudspeaker voice.
Okay,
and so this actor's name is it says voice on bullhorn. That's what it says. His name is Stefan Grothgar. And he has 27 credits on IMDb.
Okay, mostly and German,
just
I assume.
Every, yes, but also most of them are voice credits.
Oh, interesting.
So he's a voice actor.
That's kind of fun.
Who's doing all this? Yeah, exactly. He does video games and different TV series and things like that.
Pretty cool.
You're a bit of a gamer, aren't you? Or just your wife?
I was. The wife has become for sure much more of the gamer. So I'm sure if she's played like a Call of Duty game or something like that, she might have heard him shouting.
Right. And Sniper Elite 1. So He's got a nice number of credits on IMDb, mostly doing voice work and stuff like that. So then I looked up what does Dagwood mean? Have you ever heard the phrase or the name Dagwood before?
I feel like
does it mean anything to you?
I feel like it's kind of like a Gomer Pyle type thing.
Okay, I can understand why you think that. It's partially because you might be thinking maybe a, like Beetle Bailey type of thing.
Maybe yeah, maybe that. Yeah.
Because there is another comic strip, that was in the newspaper, that was called Blondie, where Blondie's husband's name was Dagwood. Dagwood Bumstead.
Huh. Okay.
Who, you know, his this character was created in 1930, and he's a he's.
Oh, I know these comic strips. Yeah, I know this one. Okay.
Right. So they also had a whole bunch of movies in the 1930s featuring the characters of Blondie and Bum and Dagwood. Okay. And the whole idea was that he was he was the heir to a fortune and was disowned because he married Blondie, whose last name was Boopadoop. and his family saw her as being below his class, and therefore they got rid of him. So he went to go work at a construction company as an office manager in order to support his family. And they had two children, Baby Dumpling and Cookie. And they had a dog named Daisy the dog.
Okay.
And the name of the last name Bumstead came from the writer. The writer's name was Chick Young. So he had a good friend whose name was Arthur Bumstead. So he decided to use him. But one of the things that this character is mostly known for is the Dagwood sandwich, where he would have this tall, multi-layered sandwiches that were topped with an olive on a toothpick. And it actually became something very well known in the English language dictionary, the whole thing of this Dagwood sandwich.
Oh,
so because he would wake up at night and make these big sandwiches and stuff like that.
Just so he could wake up with heartburn.
Well, he would wake up beforehand and then have it.
My goodness.
Yeah. But he always caused problems and stuff like that. So maybe that's the connection between calling him Dagwood Dusseldorf or whatever it is. I'm not 100% sure like where the whole idea came from. But then it got me thinking about like were there also real names of people that were trying to use propaganda against the Allied troops. I mean, again, I mentioned before Tokyo Rose. Which Tokyo Rose was not a specific woman. It was any woman who was spewing propaganda against the against the Allied troops in the Pacific. They also had in the European battlefield. They had I guess you can even call it a character named Lord Haw Haw. Who would broadcast propaganda against the Allies? In Italy, they had a woman named Rita Zucca. But the Americans tried getting back also, and instead of to go against Tokyo Rose, they had someone named Mitsu Yoshima. And they had. Against the German Navy crews, they had a woman or the character named Agnes Burnell, who was known as Vicky. It always makes me laugh that they actually tried. I mean, obviously they were probably successful in some circumstances, but the whole idea of this is just crazy. And there's also Axis Sally. I'm sure you've probably heard of that one.
That one, I feel like I have in some capacity. I feel like I have. Yeah. It's just funny the amount of effort they go into doing something like that just to try to catch one or two people slipping off guard or something like.
That's right. for sure. And during Vietnam, they had Hanoi Hannah and Soul City Sue.
So Hanoi Hannah and Hannah makes sense War. Then because what is it? Jane Fonda. They started calling her Hanoi Jane. So okay, so that's all right.
That's right.
That clicks.
That's right. And so right after Hill explains that it's Dagwood Dusseldorf. So then we hear Dusseldorf say, "The Statue of Liberty is kaput."
Which is so, and, like, saying kaput obviously is, you know, hearing it, it sounds silly. Like saying something is kaput or donezo, you know what I mean? Like, if someone were to say it's gone or demolished or destroyed, I feel like that has a much more, there's much more intensity behind it. But to be like, it's kaput. It's, I don't know, to me it sounds kind of silly. But I understand the importance of and severity of what they're trying to convey.
Correct. And then Miller looks over at Hill and goes, "The Statue of Liberty is kaput." And then right on key, we hear Dusseldorf once again say, "Kaput." And then Miller goes, "That's discerning."
They're just so concerned.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at that, you know. Now, do you know what year they dedicated the Statue of Liberty?
Oh.
That is now kaput.
And the first number jumping out at me is 1903, but I feel like it was that.
No, it was 1886.
Wow, okay. Way earlier than I thought it was going to be. 1886?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, they started building it in 1865, and they actually had the hand ready in 1876 for the centennial, and it was displayed at the Centennial Exhibition in Philadelphia in 1876, and also in Madison Square Park between 1876 and 1882. And, you know, a few years later, then they finally had the whole thing finally put together. Mm. So. Yeah, and obviously it's on Liberty Island, and there that they have on it that the names of the people who designed it, and then there's another plaque on it saying that it's a gift from the People's Republic of France to honor the alliance, right?
I knew it was
to honor France. The alliance of the two nations, attesting to abiding their friendship. There is a plaque placed by the Freemasons in a cornerstone. So if you want to get into conspiracy theories and stuff, that now you thought it was in 1903. In 19, by Emma Lazarus called the New Colossus. So there's a tablet that bears that that they added to. So you see, you didn't know about something in 1903.
Part of it, right? Because it's gonna be your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched, wretched something something teeming shore. And I just know that first part. I don't know the rest of it.
Okay. Now, how tall do you think the entire statue is? You have the statue of the woman itself, and also the foundation. All the way to the tip of the torch. What do you think the height is of both of those?
So of just the woman and then the entirety?
You can do either.
Okay. I'm just gonna go for the entirety of it. And are we doing this in feet? Are we doing this in metric?
You can do it in feet or meters, whatever you want. I have the information for both.
All right. Part of me wants to say like 1776, but I know that that's way too high. So I'll just let's 250, 275. Let's say 275.
Is that feet or meters?
275 feet.
It is 305 feet. So you're very
okay.
Close.
All right, we're
off by
there.
30. That's pretty good. You're off by 30 feet. No, that's still pretty great, you know. So the foundation of the pedestal to the tip of the torch is 305 feet.
Okay.
The height of the statue itself is 151 feet.
Okay.
The heel to the top of the head is 111 feet. The hand, the height of the hand is 16 feet. The index finger is 8 feet long. The head from chin to cranium is 17 feet. And the head from ear to ear is 10 feet across.
Wow.
I mean, I have a lot more of the distance between the eyes and the length of the nose.
Oh, no, keep going. I might sound facetious. I'm genuinely curious about those lengths.
Okay, so the distance across the eye is 2 feet 6 inches. The length of the nose is 4 feet 6 inches. Wow. The length of the right arm is 42 feet. The thickness of the right arm is 12 feet. The thickness of the waist is 35 feet. The width of the mouth is 3 feet. The length of the tablet is 23 feet 7 inches. The width of the tablet is 13 feet 7 inches. The thickness of the tablet is 2 feet. The height of the pedestal. Yeah. The height of the pedestal is 89 feet. The height of the foundation is 65 feet. The weight of the copper used in the statue is 60,000 pounds. God. The weight of the steel used in the statue is 250,000 pounds. So the total weight of the entire statue is 450,000 pounds.
That is ridiculous.
Completely. Ridiculous, but it's fascinating.
And how incredible it has to be, too, because it's not like you can just decide, you know, what's the height going to be and then throw a random number. I mean, I know I just did trying to guess and everything. But then it comes down to proportion, right? And just because it looks proportionate from afar on paper doesn't mean that come statue time it's going to look right. So I'm sure they had to, like, mess around with, like, how far apart are they? Like, they had to draw all this out and come up with all these equations. And to do it in the mid-1800s, I mean, like, the time and the energy and, again, the math, they had to get it just right. Could you imagine trying to make one of these today? It would take 5 times as long. You'd have 20 different people on 30 different computer systems trying to figure it out to make it. And they did it with pencils and paper and copper.
Right. Well, now, nowadays, nowadays I think that they would do, obviously they would constantly be having to recheck themselves to make sure that they do it right, you know, but I guess that's why people go to school to study to be engineers.
Yeah. So they can build statues of copper and steel.
There you go. That's right.
It's still really wild, though. Just like, and do you think that they took those measurements and just gave them to them and we're taking them on our word? Or do you think we've taken people up there? And, like, obviously you're not just getting a tape measure out. You're saying, hey, Larry, hold it by the eye, and then measuring it.
Well, Rima Williams was up there, so you never know. Maybe that he is true. Measured it, you know, as he was jumping back and forth.
Might have had a tape measure in his pocket.
That's right. It's very possible. So at this point, the runner shows up, you know, the guy that Hill had asked for, and he starts giving him instructions, and he goes, take the second left. And then out of nowhere, Mellish just starts screaming, and he goes, your father was circumcised by my rabbi, you prick. Now, I got to tell you, this makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I noted it too when he's yelling. I'm like, they can't hear you. It's raining. There's gunfire. Like, you're trying to make your buddies laugh, which I get, but it's like no one's hearing you.
That's right. No, but that's part of it. But the other part of it is the comment makes no sense. You know, is he telling the German that you're actually a Jew? Is that his is that his comeback that he's saying? And it's funny that you know, he then calls him a prick. Because a prick is basically a euphemism for a penis, you know. So
I didn't think of it that way, but yeah, you're right.
It doesn't really, the comment doesn't really make much sense. Basically, he's saying your father, you know, to say your father was circumcised by my rabbi. I don't know. It doesn't really make much sense.
No, and he's very prickly when he says it. So there's a lot of prick going around.
That's right. That's definitely true. And then we go back to Hill, who's continuing to give instructions. And what's really funny is you hear Hill giving instructions on the right-hand side of the screen. But if you look on the left-hand side of the screen, you see that Caparzo and Mellish are doing other things, you know, as he's talking. So like he'll continue talking. He goes, "Private Ryan, James, probably misdropped with the 101. Got that?" And you know, as he's saying this, so we see Caparzo like rifling through a whole bunch of apples that are on the ground, and like he picks one up and offers it to Mellish. And then, you know, at this point, he picks one up himself and then starts. So he takes a bite into it, you know, checking out the apple. I guess they needed to give Vin Diesel something to do at this point, you know, to make him feel a little more important, especially knowing what's going to be happening to him in the next week.
Or maybe he just did it not out of spite, but he just like in a weird improv way did it, and they just rolled with it. They're like, "Hey, that's a pretty good idea."
There you go. It's true. Could be. Hey, take a bite. How about them apples? Apples, right?
Hey, how about them?
Yeah, but no, I just like the added touch that he, you know, he's rifling through them looking for something good, and then he takes a bite out of one of them, and then basically just throws it
Yeah,
down
he's just like, eh.
as you know, exactly. And then the runner takes off, and as he's you know, then we then Hill screams out cover, and then we get a whole bunch of machine gun fire because they're giving covering fire for him. And you know, as he makes it about halfway across, now if you watch this guy, he's running pretty lacklusterly. You know, he's not really running very I don't know, sprucely, I
Sprightly.
don't know the word for that. Sprightly, there you go. And you know, he eventually gets hit and falls down. And then the men continue returning fire. And then Caparzo runs across to take cover near Miller as you know, as he's trying to get closer to what's going on to I guess try and help out from over there, possibly.
Possibly.
And at this point, you know, we see Caparzo like trying to peek over the wall to watch, you know, as the gunner continues shooting at the body that's on the ground. And Caparzo then screams out, he goes, "You sadistic!" And then he gets cut off. And that's how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I did just want to say, and you touched on it earlier with propaganda and everything, just how propaganda is probably one of the most deadliest, if not the deadliest weapon of war, deadliest weapon of war. And a lot of people don't realize that. Some people don't even know what propaganda is at times. And I think the lines are becoming blurred more and more every day. But with that propaganda comes like humor to fight against it, right? And this minute is really, really intense. Because we go from finding humor in this false Nazi propaganda, right? Miller's like, "Oh, you know, that's no good." You know what I mean? Like, "Oh, the Statue of
The
Liberty's
Statue of
gone. Oh
Liberty is
no,
kaput.
yeah, that's concerning." To where, you know, then we're slinging insults that soldiers can't hear. He's looking at apples, trying to find one he likes. Meanwhile, there's shooting going on. It's not like when the shooting starts, he stops and he goes, he's still picking through apples to see which one he likes most. But when a shot gets too close, that's when he, "Oh, I guess I better pay attention to this." And then, you know, when he peeks over the wall and sees this body getting shot up, there's so much that's happening within that minute that the frailty of the human psyche is insane. And to see that we often will use humor to combat everything that's going on, or we'll try to find just some type of sense of normality to get through what we're going through. I can't think of any better demonstration or example of that than with this minute in this film, because there's a lot of characters in this film that change psychologically because they get broken, and it's a bummer. Like, it's a real, real bummer, but just how they're able to stave it off for as long as they can, a lot of it's the humor, and a lot of it is kind of, you know, grieving and excising that emotion in their own terms, which we, you know, see on and off throughout the film. But this is without, you know, I mean, yeah, there's a little blood and violence, sure, but the intensity of this minute, I don't think can be any more understated than what it is. Like, it is, there is a lot going on psychologically in this minute.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's part of the idea here is to slowly build up the everything that's going on here, little by little. You know, letting us get an idea of what these men are going through, and on so many levels, both on a physical level and on a mental level, with obviously psychological level from that perspective also. I love the way they do it. No question about that. All right. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guests will give their top five World War II movies. So, Nick, once again, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Number five is probably the happiest on the list, and that is The Sound of Music. Nothing like a World War II musical. So right. Number five, Sound of Music. Number four is Dunkirk. Number three is Come and See. Number two is Son of Saul. And number one is Schindler's List.
Yeah, you definitely went with the with the heavy ones.
Yeah, I mean, that top three, Schindler's List is a beautiful film, but it is absolutely devastating. And it's, I hate to say that I enjoy watching it, because that's not what it is, but there's something about watching that film that has just such an intense power to it, and there's nothing quite like it. There's no other film out there like Schindler's List. Come and See is very close. I think Son of Saul taps into something a little bit differently, but the power that Schindler's List has is it's truly just astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing that a film like that, and unfortunate at the same time that a film like that exists. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's nuts. I'm sure a lot of people are going to have, you know, obviously Saving Private Ryan or something a little more war action heavy. I mean, yeah, there is a little bit of action in this film, but it very much is looking at the other side of things. And, you know, it was, yeah, not humanity's best, you know?
Right. Okay. I definitely understand that. All right. Thank you very much for that. Nick, why don't you once again tell people where they can find Nick Rehak?
They can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. I'm a part of two programs over there. You have Play MST for me. Jason Soto is essentially my Sherpa, and we are climbing the mountain that is Mystery Science Theater 3000. We are watching every single episode in order, from its public access TV show days to wherever it's gotten to. I've never seen the show. He has seen every single episode multiple times, so it's been a staggering and awesome and just hilarious journey, and I've loved it, and I think you'll love it too if you check it out over at rabbitholepodcasts.com.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this?
My solitude, you.